Satellite didn't happen last week, but last week, let's call it at Satellite, the army stormed the Satellite building and seized a whole lot of people, and only one or two people actually escaped. We don't know what happened to the rest. We've only heard the little tales from the one or two. But her son is gone. Her oldest son, who is now the man of the house, is gone. Her husband is gone, and she's sitting on a Sunday afternoon on her couch with tears running down her cheeks, and she's got these two little daughters there, and she's saying, How can I keep doing this? Everything like this, all of these things have happened because we were Christians. How can I keep raising my daughters like this? What do I do? And now what happens if you had a simple out, simple way out? Everything would stop. All the persecution would stop. You would gain family that you never knew you had. But it might cost you everything that God was calling you to do in this life. Would you take it? Would you take the easy out? Can you guys pray with me quickly? Lord Jesus, I want to pray that tonight the words that I speak would come humbly before your throne. And that with them and through them, Lord, you would speak mightily to our church through your Spirit. In Jesus' name, amen. So it's my great pleasure and joy to speak to you guys tonight about the book of Hebrews. And it's a beautiful book. It's a complex book, and we can lose ourselves in detail sometimes. But what I want to try and do tonight is just take a step back. And if you guys were here this morning, it's amazing how I've prepared and Andy prepared, and like our messages are actually really complementing each other really well without planning it. But if you weren't here this morning, please download Andy's message and listen to it. I think the way everything is lining up, I've just got a sense that God wants to say something to the church through this book of Hebrews, through these little two preachers, this short whistle-stop tour. But download those things and listen to it. He spoke fantastically this morning. There's riches there for us to walk into. So Hebrews, let's get into it. We don't know who wrote it, but we can make some sort of guesses at who it was written to. There's two big clues, and the first clue comes right at the end of the book. And what happens is the author says that all those from Italy greet you. So it's kind of like, you know, if we plant a church in Canada and they write a letter back to us, it's like saying all those from South Africa, because there's too many to actually name individually, all of them send their greetings. Or it could be that maybe they're just writing from Italy to other people. But I think the former, and the reason why I say that is because of the second big clue. The second big clue is that this book is very unique in the sense that, can something be very unique? Unique in the sense that it's written to half a church, which is weird. Like all the other books in the New Testament are written to one whole church or maybe a group of churches or an individual. But why half a church? So what do I mean by half a church? Well, it's written to the Hebrews, and it's not written to the Jewish nation. It's written to Jewish Christians, so Christians of Jewish descent. But now the church would have been made up of two groups of people. That would have been, roughly speaking, would have been Christians of Jewish descent and Christians of non-Jewish descent or Gentile descent. Kind of like our church today might be made up of supporters of good rugby teams and supporters of not so good rugby teams. The good rugby team might be the Lions. I don't know. But this book is written to half the church. It's written only to the Jewish Christians. And there's a reason why. So why would someone write a book to half a church? Why would someone say, I'm only writing to this half of the church. You guys don't worry about it. Only you guys. Well, there must have been some reason, some circumstance, some challenge that was affecting those people who he was writing to that necessitated, I have to write to only these people because only these people are facing this challenge. And when we start to look back into history, we start understanding what this challenge was. See, now, for a Jewish person, if you're a Jewish Christian, had been, you would have experienced a rather rough time at the hands of the Roman nation. Because there was an emperor called Claudius who was in power around about the AD 40s and early AD 50s. And he took a very hard line against Jews. In fact, in AD 49, he took such an angry stance against the Jews that he exiled 40,000 Jews from Rome. Kicked out. Imagine 40,000 Jews out. Get out of my city. And it wouldn't just have been an exile. It would have been everything that leads up to it. It would have probably started with, you know, no, we're not going to trade with you, or you can't get a job over here. It would have progressed to, oh, I can't invite that person to my social meetings. Would have progressed to publicly being beaten, whipped and scourged, and all of these sort of horrible things, culminating with taking your house, kicking you out of your house and kicking you out of the city with anything that you had. All you could do is just run out of the city with what you could carry, if that. 40,000 Jews had to just get out of Rome. And it wouldn't have just stopped with Rome. It's kind of like in South Africa, if our government makes a decision, it doesn't just affect our capital cities, Cape Town, Bloemfontein, and Pretoria. It affects the whole country. So the whole Roman Empire, this thing was happening. Jews were not in favor at all. They'd lost everything. They would have been in the shoes of that husband or that wife that I asked you to imagine a couple of minutes ago, where they've lost everything. People, family, business, wealth, hope maybe. But then, a couple of years later, 5 years later, after this exile, Claudius dies. And there's a new emperor who comes to power. And this emperor takes a slightly softer view towards the Jews, and he says, no, 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 you can come back, come back. And so they do. The Jews, the entire Jewish nation, only the ones who wanted to go and live in Rome, they didn't all go to Rome, but only the ones who wanted to go to Rome, they start coming back. And that's why we get a book like Romans written, because Romans is written to this church, which was mostly a Gentile church, because all the Jewish Christians are being kicked out. Now the Jewish Christians are coming back, and it's like, well, how does this fit together? Like, who's better? Did God turn his back on them or not? And it's written, the last 8 chapters of Romans are all about how do these two groups of people come together as one church. But that's just a freebie. That's not where we're going tonight. But now we've got this group of people, these Jewish Christians who've come back. They've already lost everything once. And now as that emperor, his name was Nero, you guys might have heard of the emperor Nero, as his rule went on, he started to get more and more hardline, this time not against Jewish people, but against Christians. So you've already been through all of this once. You've already lost everything, loved ones, once. And now you start seeing the same warning signs. People start getting sort of neglected. They don't get business deals. No one trades with them. They start getting ostracized. They start getting maybe beaten. Maybe they even start getting arrested. And you know where this is starting to lead. Your church, that church in Rome actually had to go underground. They were meeting, and Jeff mentioned this last week, they're meeting in like caves, and he used this analogy of, you know, imagine like being in this cave in this dark around this candle, listening to this guy, and all of a sudden there's footsteps and everyone panics because you're like, what's happening? Is this going to be the soldiers? What's going to happen to us? And it's just the guy who's late for church. And it's actually okay. But that was the reality of what these people were facing. These guys were going through all of this all over again. They were scared. They were losing hope. But they had an escape. And here's the key. This escape was something that was very attractive to them. All they had to do as a Jewish Christian is instead of going and meeting with the believers, with the Christian church, all you had to do is go back to the synagogue. So if you go back to the synagogue, think about the benefits over here. All of a sudden, your family and your friends who you'd grown up with, who when you became a Christian, it was like, oh, like you're not part of us anymore because you've betrayed our faith. All of a sudden, now you're coming back, and now that mother who's got these two little daughters that doesn't know what to do with, all of a sudden she can find security and strength again in a community because the Jewish community would welcome her back. The Romans would leave them alone. And you could even justify it by saying, well, it's the same God. He's the same God I'm worshiping, and we're reading the same scriptures, bearing in mind that at that time, the churches would only have had the Old Testament. They might have had the odd letter that was written to them, maybe a gospel, but the New Testament as we know it today certainly wasn't circulating as one document. So you've got this excuse. It's like, it's the same God. It's security. It's the Romans will leave me alone. I won't be persecuted anymore. And I can even read the same scriptures. There was only one catch. Before they could come back to the synagogue, they had to say in front of the synagogue and the high priest who ran the synagogue, I do not believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And then you can join the synagogue. So given that choice, would you make it? Would you make it? And that is the context in which this book is written. The author is writing to half a church because only half a church had this option, this bailout, to solve all their problems. But if they took the bailout, then all of a sudden you're going from this body that says, Lord, I want to walk into everything that you have for me. And you're saying, no, I'm going to be part of this body that says, I do not believe. And all the promises and all of the purposes that God had for your life over there that you would have walked into, now you all of a sudden walking in a completely different direction. And the author is saying, don't go back. That's his message. Don't go back. But at the same time, he's not unsympathetic, because he knows just how hard this is going to be. This isn't an easy thing. This is a terrifying and fearful thing that these people are having to go through. But he says to them this. He says, Hebrews chapter 2, verse 18, and he's talking about Jesus here. He says, for because he himself has suffered when tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. See, part of the reason why Jesus had to become man is that he had to suffer and be tempted as we are, so that he's able to comfort us in these very struggles that we're going to go through. He's saying, you've got a comforter. And he goes on, at the end of chapter 4, he says this. He says, for we do not have a high priest, that's Jesus, who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in the time of need. You have a tough situation. You have an easy way out, but it will cost you. Don't take it. Yes, it will be hard. Yes, there will be challenges, but Jesus is your strength. Jesus is your comforter. He will provide, come before the throne of grace and receive grace and mercy in your time of need. That is what this book is encouraging these Hebrew believers to do. And then he uses the example in chapters 3 and 4, he uses the example of the Israelite nation. And how amazing is this? Look at this. Look at the picture. The Old Testament is incredible in the pictures that sort of foreshadow what's going to happen in the New Testament. Look at this in the Old Testament. The Israelite nation is in Egypt. They're in slavery to a foreign god. Pharaoh calls himself a god. They're in slavery in Egypt. They're stuck there. And by the power of God, they are brought out of Egypt. They go through the Red Sea, through water. And as that water closes behind them, they're free. But they've still got to keep on walking through the desert to get to the promised land. Is that not similar to us, dead in sin, captives to this, in the power of this world and the devil? And we come to a point where you say, Lord, save me. And you put your trust in him, and he brings you, you baptize, and he brings you through water, and all of a sudden you're free. But you've still got to keep on walking into the things he's calling you into.
Very good.
And that's the image that the author uses. He says, that is what I did with your... The Hebrew, the Christian believers, the Jewish believers would have known this. They would have been familiar with this. And he says to them, don't make the mistake that your fathers made. Your fathers, do you know this, guys? We all say, yeah, it took them 40 days through the wilderness. Did you know that the trip from the Red Sea to the quickest point to get into the promised land would have taken them, how many days do you think it would have taken them to walk? It's about, I mean, give or take, they're moving about 2 million people, they're moving a lot of people, but it's about 11 days. But it took them 40 years. It's not that far. I mean, it's far, but 11 days of walking is far, but 40 years. And you know why? It's because when they come through the Red Sea, God is great, this is amazing, and they start walking, and then they come to the promised land, they send out 12 spies, and 12 spies go out, and 10 of them come back, and they say, whoa, the land's good, but these people are huge, they're strong, they're powerful, they're fearful. We don't have an army, we've never been a nation, we don't know how to fight. We can't do this. To put it in context, the land they were going into was Canaan. Now, Canaan and Egypt, between them, were the two military and economic superpowers of the time. So it's very similar to the situation that these believers are in, because Rome was the superpower of the time. It's kind of like America is the superpower right now. And we're saying, yeah, but, you know, these 10 guys are like, uh-uh, I'm not going in there. I'll die, probably. My family might die. We can't. We can't do it. And yet the two spies who come back and they say, we can. If God can bring us out of that superpower, he can bring us into this superpower. He's a faithful God and he'll do it. But the voice of the 10 drowns out the voice of the 2. And so the whole nation turns around and says, no, we can't do it. And they wander for 40 years. And they never walk into that promised land until the next generation comes and they take it. So, how do we make this applicable to 3CI here in 2015? Fortunately, we don't have to go home worrying about what the cops and the army is going to do. We don't face that kind of persecution, and I don't think we should try to look for that kind of persecution. But what we should do is look at the persecution temptation that we do face, and we should address it. So, Mark chapter 4. In Mark chapter 4, Jesus is speaking, and he's speaking about the parable of the sower. Now, in this parable, Jesus says, I sow seed, and it falls on four different kinds of soil. Now, the first two I'm not going to get into, but the second two I want to have a look at tonight. One of those is it's seed that falls into soil, but then as it grows up, weeds grow up along with it, and these weeds choke it down, and they suck the nutrients out of the soil and take the sunlight, and this seed that was sown can't grow and produce. And Jesus, when he explains what he means by weeds to his disciples, he says, the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desire for other things. Now, we don't have a Roman army that's about to throw us in jail, but we do have those three things. So I want to put this out to you guys tonight, is how many of you feel like you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders this evening? Maybe it's been a rough week at work. Maybe it's relationship pressure. Maybe it's sort of in a marriage or boyfriend, girlfriend. Maybe it's family. There's just pressure. Maybe as some of the students are coming back into the city, you're sitting here and you're thinking, am I going to make it through next term? Can I pass this thing? Can I do this? Maybe you're stressed about, jeepers, will I actually do my folks proud, or am I going to let them down? Can I, if I fail this, and the what ifs. Maybe we've got financial pressures. Prices of things are going up. Maybe we don't know where we're going to pay the next few bills from. Cares of this world on you. I'm going to say, if that is you tonight, if the cares of this world are on you, the warning here is don't do what the Israelites did. What did they do? They took matters into their own hands. I will be safer if I just make my own decision and don't go into this promised land. And the warning from Hebrews is don't take it into your own hands. Guys, God did not make you to fight these battles and face these things on your own. Instead, can you come before the throne of grace and ask, Lord Jesus, give me grace and mercy because I am in a time of need. Yeah. He is a faithful God and he can come through for you. Then to a second group of people, the deceitfulness of riches. Now, I don't want to say much about the deceitfulness of riches. I just want to ask a simple question. How many of us are already planning what to do with our next paycheck that's coming in, or our next allowance that's coming in? How are we going to spend it? But we haven't yet got on our knees before the Lord and said, Lord, how can I be a good steward of this? My challenge to you is asking. Sometimes we just plod along in life without asking. And all we've got to do is say, take a step back and say, Lord, how do I honor you with what's coming into my life? So we've got on one side the cares of this world, and on the other side, we've got these blessings and, you know, the things we tend to run over. Maybe it's not financial. Maybe it's power. Maybe it's success. Maybe it's pride. All of these things. The desire for other things. One of the things that I count as one of the biggest blessings in my life is the fact that I came to know the Lord at a young age. Because what it means is that God's been able to work in my heart. He's been able to build character. He's been able to, every time I say yes, he's able to just work a little bit more so that I'm able to be a slightly better steward next time, so that I'm able to handle pressure and these bad situations that come along and life happens, but I'm able to handle it a little bit better each time. And all of a sudden, God can actually build something. And I'm so excited about the fact that I got to start this from a young age, because what could God do? What could he do going forwards? And if you're old, don't underestimate what God can do through a person who says yes. Take Abraham's example. He wasn't young when he started saying yes. But look what God did. So if you have the cares of this world and if you have all of your blessings, all of the struggles and all of your blessings, may you take these, both of them, to the foot of the same cross. And may you say, Lord, may you give me grace and mercy in this time of need, and may you help me to be a faithful steward. Because, and here's the catch. Sometimes I want us to do that tonight, but it doesn't stop there. You see, because tomorrow morning, you're going to have more cares, and you're going to have this question of what do I do with my blessings? And on Tuesday, and next week, Monday, and in 2 months' time, it's all going to come. When you're about to write exams, when the next deadline comes up, guys, it's going to happen again. And this thing is a thing of coming before the cross every day, every time this stuff comes up and saying, Lord, I trust you. I trust you. Every time looking to him first, not what the Israelites did and saying, in my own strength, in my own power, I'm going to face this thing according to my wisdom. We're not made to do that, guys. But if we can come before God like that all the time, that is simply faith. That doing it every day is faith. See, sometimes we mix up faith and hope. Hope to me is like, to use a mountaineering sort of term, like hope is that thing where you look and you can see this picture of yourself on top of the mountain being like, yes, I made it. And it's amazing, it's beautiful. Faith is the thing that along the way, every time you're terrified, every time you're cold and hungry and exhausted, keeps you clinging to that mountain, keeps you moving forward. Faith is this thing that is going to help us to fight every day. When we're stressed about our finances, when we're stressed about work, when we're stressed about varsity, when we're stressed about our relationships or finding husbands and wives, when we're stressed about all of these things, and when we say, Lord, what I do with all my blessings, faith is the thing that keeps us coming back to the cross and saying, Lord, I have this picture of you being able to take care of me. I have this picture of you being able to provide for me and that you're an amazing God. I have this picture that one day I'll be united in heaven with you. Faith is the thing that keeps you carrying on towards that goal every day. And Hebrews climaxes amazingly at chapter 11 when it speaks about the hall of faith. So all these people who just had faith and what God was able to accomplish in their lives through that simple act of saying yes. But here's the funny thing, you see, and I want to bring you guys back to Mark 4. See, I hadn't forgotten about that other type of seed. But that other type of seed was seed that fell on good soil. No weeds this time. That just grew up. It just grew up, and it yields a crop of 30, 60, 100 fold. And sometimes in our lives we read that, and it's like, yo, God, that, like, how? Like 30, 60, that sounds too big. Like, does that mean that I have to be Rory? Does that mean that I have to be the next Martin Luther or something? Does that mean that I have to be Paul or someone who walks through like crowds and like people who touch his cloak are healed and like demons will flee? And sometimes in our instant gratification now society, we think that's how it's going to be. But I want to take that weight off you guys tonight, because that's not necessarily. Maybe some people will have that sort of gifting because that's the purpose that God has for their lives. But that is not their expectation. See, simply faith is the thing of saying yes, and yes, and yes, and yes. And to round this up, I want to use two stories. One story was, we're chatting about this in home group on Tuesday night, and Conrad actually mentioned the story of a guy who went to China, sold everything he had, went to China to be a missionary. He was convinced he needed to be a missionary, and he said yes to God. He went there, bought this little plot of land, and he was going to start evangelizing to the whole of China. No one listened. Like, it didn't work. And he was like, oh, God, what's happening? I don't get it. I said yes to you. And yet, many years after he died, there were people in China who were trying to start churches, but the Chinese government wouldn't sell them, wouldn't allow them to buy land in order to build a church on it. And this little plot of land that man had bought had been passed down through inheritance to the exact right person who was able to use that plot of land to build that church, which grew. See, he just had faith. He didn't see the end result. He didn't see the end result, but God is faithful. And I think of a person like Abraham, a person like Abraham who just said yes to God. God promised him he would become the father of many nations. He never lived to see that. But imagine if you could be Abraham right now, sitting in heaven and looking back at what God has accomplished through his faith. 30, 60, 100 is not once off. It's as a result of a whole lot of series of yeses and trustings in your struggles and in your blessings. Just trusting God with them. So the last thing, maybe Ricky, if you can put up that photo. So this is a family photo. This is my wife's, right in the middle there. There's my wife's great-grand at her 99th birthday a couple of years ago. And there's probably a couple of spouses over there, but I counted that earlier, and I think there's some people missing from that photo, but there's about 57 people in that photo. All as a result of one lady and her husband. And I want to say to you guys tonight, what can God do with your life over time if you'll just say yes to him day after day after day? This 30, 60, 100 thing suddenly doesn't seem that big anymore. We don't have to change the world in a day, but God is calling us in the midst of your struggles and pressures and in amongst your blessings to just say, Lord, I come before your throne of grace. May you give me mercy and grace for this time of need. And may you show me how to be a faithful steward of that which you have given me.